This is a Media Lab podcast. Welcome to Putting It Together, the podcast that goes through the entire body of work of Stephen Sondheim, show by show and song by song. My name is Kyle Marshall, your self-described Sondheim expert. Hopefully you've been enjoying these Sondheim Redux episodes that we are currently in. Today, of course, as you see by the title, we are jumping back into Company, talking about being alive. You know, a song that's not covered very much, not talked or discussed about in Sondheim lore, certainly not analyzed to death. I'll just let that hang there for a moment. Luckily, we do have Will C. White back as a guest who was just here, actually, to talk about I'll Never Do Anything Twice from the movie The 7% Solution. But as you'll hear, he has a very alternate take on this song that I think is fascinating. So can't wait to share that with you. Before we get into the episode today, just a couple of things. One, I want your suggestions. As you know, over on the Patreon page, we have recently hit $150 per month, which is very exciting for me. But I did set as a goal over on Patreon that if I were to hit $150 per month, then as a bit of a bonus, I would post each month a Sondheim-adjacent topic. I'm leaving that broad and wide open. And how I envision these episodes to go is really just a laid-back, probably just me talking about some stuff that's going on, a little bit of a delving into the topic, but not like a super heavy deconstruction of what that bonus episode is going to be about. Anyways, this is all as a lead up to say that what has been suggested over on the Patreon is that we'll be talking about Evita, because Hal Prince, longtime Sondheim collaborator, directed Evita. So let's talk a little bit about that show. What I need from you then, is anyone who's listening to this, your thoughts on Evita, maybe Hal Prince in general, but really thoughts on Evita, whether you've seen the movie starring Madonna, whether you love the Patti LuPone original version, whether you like another Evita specifically. I want your thoughts, your feelings, your hot takes, your cold takes, doesn't matter. Send those in, puttingittogetherpodcast@gmail.com, or hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, @SondheimPodcast. Secondly, I do want to get to an email that was sent to me. This was sent in from David. He actually sent in a few different things. Apparently, where he is living, there was a production of Anyone Can Whistle, which is mind-bending. A bunch of people apparently left at the intermission, which is too bad, but that is a fact that he let me know about. But he wanted to call back to the episode on Welcome to Kanagawa, where he said he was struck by the line, "But with appropriate veneering, even Greenwood has its charm." So he writes, "While obviously it works in the context of the lyrics, I also think the fact that it sounds like venereal could well be intentional. With any other writer, I'd think it a coincidence. But with Sondheim, it feels like there's no such thing." I kind of agree. Ever since I've received this email, I've just been turning it over and over and over in my head. And it feels like it could be. I mean, within the context of who is singing that song, the fact that it is a pretty similar root word, I don't know. Love to hear your thoughts on that too, but I feel like there might be something that Sondheim is subtly and cheekily playing around with. All right, there's no sense of being around the bush any longer. Let's jump into this episode with Will C. White talking about being alive.
Someone to hold you too close. Someone to hurt you too deep. Someone to sit in your chair, to ruin your sleep.
That's true, but there's more than that.
Is that all you think there is to it?
You've got so many reasons for not being with someone, but Robert, you haven't one good reason for being alone.
Come on, you're onto something, Bobby. You're onto something.
Someone to need you too much. Someone to know.
Will, thank you so much for returning back to the show.
A pleasure, Kyle. Thanks for having me back on.
It's like we were just recording mere moments ago.
Funny that.
Funny how that works. I to pull the curtain back a little bit for the listening audience, we're in our kind of what I'm calling Sondheim Redux miniseries. So we're going through Being Alive here today and some of the different options that there were for finishing the show of Company. And two things jump to mind. One, because this is the first one we're doing, not the first one being released probably, but the first one that we're doing, my guess is that this is going to be much more of a, like a loosey-goosey structure to this conversation than normal. So we'll see how this goes. Secondly, I should just point out that Will has never let me forget they did not invite him on for the company season. So
that is not true, Kyle. You mm-hmm. said that I could choose whatever song I wanted to, and I thought I might as well pick something from Company since I wasn't on for that season.
Let's talk about Company, I guess, a little bit more broadly here. I guess just for you personally, like, is Company best, top three, top five? Like, where does it fit for you, I guess, in Sondheim's output?
Not top three. Maybe top five, something. Okay. I think it's a very good show with a lot of weaknesses and just weirdnesses.
What are those weaknesses and weirdnesses?
Well, I mean, and you know, I don't begrudge it not having a plot. In fact, the older I get, the less interested I am in plot as like a device anyway, like it's movies and stuff in particular. Like, I think, you know, ditch the plot as soon as you can. You know, just give me
just throw it in the garbage. No one cares.
Characters, you know, give me good characters, good vibes, good music, and then I think that you've got a show or a movie or something. So, but the structure of this is peculiar, and I think that some of the scenes are stronger than others. But I think the score is very good, and you know, I think that it is interesting. I think it's a very interesting show. You know, rather than one that, like, I would say that I love deeply.
Yeah, gotcha. When was your first introduction to Company?
When I was a sophomore in college, I got to music direct Company. So this was the first Sondheim show that I ever worked on. And
But you knew Sondheim before then or no?
I had only known Into the Woods. I mean, I knew West Side Story very well, but I mean, I had music directed that show. But, you know, from the musician's perspective, that's really a Leonard Bernstein show.
Bernstein, yeah.
Yeah, no, I didn't know too much of Sondheim before. And this was, you know, a real way to dive in the deep end about Sondheim. Yeah. I mean, I really had to learn it from top to bottom. And I did fall in love. I mean, I just said that, you know, you don't fall in love with the show, but I did fall in love with it then. And yeah, the music, it still speaks to me. I would not say that this is the one that I go back to the most often to re-listen to, but I'm always happy when I do. I mean, I think the songs are great. So it has a special place in my personal Sondheim pantheon.
Yeah, I guess coming from, I know, a musical directing perspective, like, what is it that you need to know in order to do that effectively for Company? Like, how is it different than Into the Woods, say?
Well, I don't think it's really all that different. I just think that, you know, from a music director's perspective, like, if you're going to music direct a show, you have to know every line. You have to know every harmony. Yeah. You have to be able to play it all. You have to be able to sing it all. You have to be able to teach it all. You have to understand it. And you have to really understand how the songs function in the show. And you have to be able to time and pace the show. You know, I mean, for me, being a music director is also being a conductor. And so you've got to know your cue lines, right? You got to know exactly the beat that things are supposed to come in on. And in Company, there's all those songs like The Little Things You Do Together, where they're like little mini scenes in between stuff, or there's like vamps going on. You've got to really have a sensitivity to when to bring in, you know, the verse again. And I think that, you know, you just have to have not only a micro sense of the show, of each individual note, but also very much the macro sense of the evening, how it unfolds. And I mean, you know, you never get to know a piece of music or a show or anything like that better than when you do it yourself.
How was that production at the end of the day?
Well, I mean, it was a college production. I'm sure that, you know, it was a little silly. I mean, having, you know, everybody be a little bit too young to play these parts, even though the people in the show are not particularly old. I'm sure it was fine for a college black box theater production. I don't know. I don't think it was any great shakes, but it was probably pretty good.
Well, I have a copy right here.
Yeah, right. I doubt that a copy exists. And if it does, I don't know that I would want to watch it. I think I'll just leave it in the memory.
Right. We are talking about, of course, Being Alive here again. But that is not the song necessarily that Sondheim wanted to finish this show off with. So what do you have as far as opinions go as some of these other options? We have Multitudes of Amys, and then Happily Ever After were the other two options.
I think that this was the best of the choice of those three, but I agree with Sondheim that it's still not exactly the right closing number for the show.
Why is that?
All right, Kyle. So now we're going to get into it. I mean, this is really why I chose this.
And I just want to point out, the angry letters are being sent to Will.
and they very well might come my way. And that's fine. I mean, I think that I have a bit of a hot take or a very idiosyncratic personal opinion about this show. To me, the end of this show in Being Alive is a bit of a tragedy. Now, I went back and listened to your previous episode about this song.
Right.
And you shared a lot about your own personal journey with the song, about how, like, you know, you really identified with Bobby. You're a person like in your mid late 30s, you know, looking for a relationship, sort of accepting that that's something that you really want in your life.
Mm.
Okay, so I am about the same age as you, same stage of life. I also can identify with Bobby, but I am a person who I've never had a relationship, and that has, it's something that I have come to realize that that is what's correct for me. And the challenge in life has been seeing past the societal pressures and norms that make everybody think that this is the one and only path, is to find, you know, your person. And so as that being my point of identification with the Bobby character, if I read myself into Bobby, then for me, if I were to accept at the end that, like, I guess I get it. I must be in a relationship. I need to get married. For me, that's like the triumph of brainwashing, of societal brainwashing, and a tragedy. I mean, then it's like you're watching a slow motion car crash, seeing somebody go into an institution that is going to ruin their lives, potentially.
Oh, interesting.
So I would love, I mean, like, okay, so great. Like in the recent revival, you know, Bobby's a woman, like, okay, you know, big revolution. To me, the revolution would be make Bobby an Arrow Ace legend, give them, whatever gender they may be, a song that like shows that, like, you know, there's more to life for some people, or there is a different life that is the version of a fulfilling life that doesn't involve partnership, marriage, and that kind of romantic relationship. So that's my, so send the letters, send the tweets at me all you want to, folks. But that's my take on it. And that's why I chose this song. I mean, you know, this song is the quintessential song of the show in a way, or at least it's framed that way. I mean, in a way, I also thought that another good insight from your earlier episode about this show was that, like, really the fun of the show is all the characters. You know, it's right. Everybody surrounding Bobby. But I think that there is enough to read into Bobby there that, like, my interpretation is a valid one. And I think that if you read between the lines of what Sondheim is saying, at least where I think that he was identifying much, you know, against his protestations to the contrary, I think that he was identifying with Bobby at that stage in his life. And I imagine that he was probably sort of at a similar state to where I am, or somewhere in between. And so I don't know. I find that it rings false, or it rings tragic in a way. So that's my big take on this song.
No, I wanna extrapolate on that maybe just a little bit more, because I think that's such a fascinating outlook. For so much of the dialogue around Company, it's about, like, and I have to say, like, I leaned into this too during that season of, like, well, is Bobby gay? Is he bisexual? Is he straight? Is he a confluence of all of those? But I actually love this idea of it being like, well, what if what we've been seeing through this is not him finally coming to terms with, like, yes, I need a relationship, but hey, maybe I don't need a relationship at all to be happy. That is an interesting way to pursue this show. I mean, you would have, if you were to do that adaptation, you would have to cut Being Alive then, because that kind of is what those lyrics are saying, I think.
You'd have to cut it.
I have to find somebody.
Yeah, you'd have to cut it. Or I think that you could re-lyricize it. There's, you know, I was thinking about this song. Like, what's the genre of this song? Like, is this a ballad? No, not quite. It's sort of an anthem, I guess. It's somewhere in between those two. It's like an up, medium tempo ballad with an anthemic property to it. And there is something about it that has a conclusive sense to it. So much so that I really agreed with your guest on that episode that, you know, the show should end at the end of Being Alive. Like, that should be the blow out the candle on the last beat. So, you know, there's something appealing and unusual about the music that I like, that I think works. And it is interesting that a lot of these lyrics were part of that Happily After Ever, Happily Ever After song, right, that that was cut, and the music was quite different for that. So I think that where he landed musically is appealing, but I would love to see a new version of this song.
Let's just talk about Happily Ever After for just a moment. Because Sondheim writes in the book Finishing the Hat, this is the song that we opened up with in Boston, and it's a bleak message. Sorry, its a bleak message was not the end of the show, however. It was followed by this epilogue in Central Park. That scene was cut because the show was running much too long, and after it was gone, Happily Ever After seemed too much of a downer. As Hal persistently called it, he fervently urged me to write an up song to replace it, but I argued that a sudden positive song, one without irony, would be unearned and pandering, not to mention monotonous, since there would be only one thing to say, namely, marriage is wonderful. Michael Bennett came up with the idea of using the same technique of interlaced spoken voices from Robert's friends that we had used in Side by Side by Side, helping him to break through his moment of crisis. That suggested to me a song which could progress from complaint to prayer, thus being alive. So I think you're right. He does share some of your views that he felt like Being Alive was just much too optimistic to end the show with after all the stuff that had come out here.
Right.
Because when you listen to Happily Ever After, like, it is a bit of an ironic song. Like, the Happily Ever After is not actually truthful in that song.
Someone to hold you too close, someone to hurt you too deep, someone to love you too hard, happily ever after. Someone to need you too much, someone to read you too well, someone to bleed you of all the things you don't want to tell. That's happily ever after, ever, ever, ever after in hell.
I agree. And I don't think that that, even in my interpretation of things, would be a fitting conclusion, because it is so dark and bitter in a way. And I think that there's a way to do the ending that I'm talking about and have it be a positive revelation rather than just dismissing marriage as, you know, this, I don't know, this negative thing. It's like, no, there's a positive realization for the character that he or she or they realize what is their personal journey and lifestyle.
In some weird alternate timeline, some new producers on Broadway wake up and like, know what we need to do? We need to rewrite Being Alive for this company revival. Will White is who we're going to commission to do this. What are those changes you would suggest? Like, how would you slightly change it?
I don't know. I would really have to think about it. But I mean, I would say that, like, I think you could keep the bones of the music intact.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it makes me think of, like, there's this opera by Puccini called La Rondine, and there's two different versions. And in one version, the heroine kills herself by walking into an ocean and drowning. And in another version, she, like, doesn't do that, and Puccini didn't change a note. He just handed the score to his librettist, and he was like, make me a new ending. And, you know, it's pretty astonishing. I'd heard that there was this, alternative ending, and I always wanted to hear what it sounded like. And it sounds like the exact same thing. It was kind of amazing to me that you could do that. And whereas I don't think that quite works as well, I think that with this song, like, you could make it work somehow.
I'm just breaking into the conversation here to let some people know about the people and organizations that help this show continue to go. What I normally start off with here is what I'm going to start off with here again. If you'd like to help support the show for absolutely free, you can give a rating and review on whatever app you listen to podcasts in. That's greatly appreciated. And if you'd like to help monetarily, which will only help to grow and make this show better, you can do so over at our Patreon page. Please do not donate if it impacts you negatively financially. I also need to give a huge thank you to the God That's Good tier from Patreon, the triumphant quartet of Jack, Todd, Carrie, Witty, and Louise. You, of course, can go to patreon.com/puttingittogetherpodcast for more information. Putting Together is also a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, locally grown, community supported. The Alberta Podcast Network promotes and supports Alberta-made podcasts and connects their audiences with Alberta-based businesses and organizations. This week, we were brought to you by PodPower. With PodPower, our sponsors are making it possible for us to amplify the voices of Albertans and Alberta podcasters. This episode, the Edmonton Community Foundation is helping us to give a PodPower shout out to What's the Cheesemus? What's the Cheesemus? A new podcast with an inside look on Philippine X identity in the diaspora. Cheesemus is a Tagalog word for gossip. Subscribe to hear weekly episodes about disappointing your parents, breaking it to your friends that you're not Italian, trying to figure out why you punched a car, and much, much more. What's the Cheesemus is produced by CJSR, Edmonton's campus and community radio station. Download wherever you find podcasts and on whatsthecheesemus.transistor.fm. Now, Cheesemus, by the way, is spelled T-S-I-S-M-I-S. What's the Cheesemus? This episode is also brought to you by Park Power, your friendly local utilities provider in Alberta, offering internet, electricity, and natural gas with low rates, awesome service, and profit sharing with local charities. You know, winter is coming, and energy usage for Albertans will be increasing, so now is a great time for listeners to look at their utility bills and ensure they are on the best plan. Albertans have a choice who they pay their utility bills to. Park Power is happy to provide free, no-obligations comparisons. If you decide to switch providers, it's easy, and you can feel good knowing you are supporting a local business and helping to give back to our communities with your utilities bills. Learn more at parkpower.ca. Well, to jump into it here a little bit, how Being Alive is performed nowadays, you have your main character, Bobby or Robert, sing, "Someone to hold you too close, someone to hurt you too deep, someone to sit in your chair to ruin your sleep." There's a few interjections, and he continues, "Someone to need you too much, someone to know you too well, someone to pull you up short, to put you through hell."
Someone to hold you too close. Someone to hurt you too deep. Someone to sit in your chair to ruin your sleep.
That's true, but there's more than that.
Is that all you think there is to it?
You've got so many reasons for not being with someone, but Robert, you haven't got one good reason for being alone.
Come on, you're onto something, Bobby. You're onto something.
Someone to need you too much. Someone to know you too well. Someone to pull you up short, to put you through hell.
You're not a kid anymore, Robert. I don't think you'll ever be a kid again, you know?
Hey, buddy, don't be afraid it won't be perfect. The only thing to be afraid of, really, is that it won't be.
Don't stop now. Keep going!
Someone.
I mean, Sondheim has kind of already said this blatantly in his write-up here. But this is supposed to be sort of a complaint at this point. Like, he's kind of begrudgingly saying these words out loud. But as far as the music and these lyrics go together, I'd like to know what your analyzing of it is.
Yeah, I think it works. I mean, you know, I think that this is the best version of what he was trying to do. You know, I mean, of what the assignment was, basically. And I think that the complaints, you know, they read as that, and then he has this revelation that, you know, it's so much more than that, and these are, you know, complaints that are worth it in the end. I feel like this song has a lot of echoes of Sorry Grateful.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's sort of like, if that's like the thesis, and then Side by Side is sort of a midpoint, and then this is rounding out that arc, or and his take on marriage.
Only because I was not anticipating this reading of the song. I'm spitballing here. I wonder if you could in this, again, alternate universe, retool the song almost to slightly change this of like being this acceptance of, listen, I have all these people in my life and they're important people in my life and I still want to hold on to them, but I don't need there to be like a romantic angle to any of these people that are in my life. So it's like friends are important, family is important, but romance is not the most important thing to me. And that could be the realization that he comes to.
I think that would be a beautiful thing, because then there's a way to tie in all of the other characters in the show into this.
Yeah, they could come into that fold.
That's a much fuller sense of life and community.
Anyways, this has made me think a lot here, Will. How dare you? Make me think. Of course, Robert goes on. Someone you have to let in, someone whose feelings you spare, someone who, like it or not, will want you to share a little, a lot, some interjections, and then someone to crowd you with love, someone to force you to care, someone to make you come through who always be there as frightened as you of being alive, being alive, being alive, being alive.
Someone you have to let in. Someone whose feelings you spare. Someone who, like it or not, will want you to share a little, a lot.
And what does all that mean?
Bobby, how do you know so much about it when you've never been there?
It's much better living it than looking at it, Bobby.
Add 'em up, Bobby. Add 'em up.
Someone to crowd you with love. Someone to force you to care. Someone to make you come through, who'll always be there, as frightened as you, of being alive, being alive, being alive, being alive.
I guess I want you to answer this two ways, Will. Which is, what do you think being alive is for Bobby in this moment in the context of the show? Let's answer that question first. Yes, like, what do you think he is talking about as far as being alive in the context of this song, in the context of this show?
Well, I mean, he's talking about opening up his personality, his interior, and sharing that with specifically one other person and seeing the value of that. Would you agree?
Yeah. I would. Yeah, I would agree with that.
And that sometimes you have to accept the negative externalities that go along with that, and the negative internalities, even more to the point, I would say. And that, you know, you need somebody to break through. I mean, that's the word that he uses, is that, like, there has to be this other person who's going to crack that exterior for you, which I think is sort of an overdone trope.
Yeah, I mean, it's true enough. I think that I think what is so interesting about this song is that acceptance of negativity isn't necessarily a bad thing. Mm-hmm. You know, there's this recent, well, I guess not so recent anymore, but recent-ish Pixar film that I just have a deep love for, which is Inside Out. And what I love about the message of that movie is basically, hey, sometimes it's good to be angry. Sometimes it's good to be sad. Sometimes it's good to be all these other different things. Which is, just, I just think, an interesting message you don't get heard, you don't hear a lot. It's like, you know, be happy, like try to suppress being angry, that sort of thing. Whether you're talking about like a romantic relationship or a friendship or even like a familial relationship, I think that all applies, where it's like not everything is going to be like sunshine and rainbows in any of those types of relationships. But it's the ones who are the most emotionally mature that's like, hey, we're having a disagreement, but we're not like hating each other from now on. There is that little bit of give and take. It's like family is the best example of this, or can be, which is like, you annoy the hell out of me, but there's a deeper bond there than just like that emotion that's coming to the fore. I don't know. I don't know if any of that tracks for you or not.
Of course it does. Yeah. I mean, but I mean, I think that, I don't think he's saying that negative things aren't bad. I mean, negative things are by definition bad, but it's just what you accept for what you get. Yeah. I mean, that's the whole setup of the song. What do you get?
Right. No, that's true. My other question is maybe a deeper question. So if you don't want to answer, that's okay. But this is what Bobby feels like is the purpose of being, not the purpose, but this is what Bobby feels is being alive. I was going to ask you personally, what is being alive for you?
Well, I mean, yeah, I have less tolerance, I guess, for the negative bad things, you know, and I don't see the upside of the positive things that they're talking about. And for me, being alive is, well, for I like to be an even keeled person. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
So like, you know, when you have this whole sorry, grateful idea that, you know, you're always in somebody's debt, you've always hurt somebody somehow, you've always been hurt by somebody somehow, and then you find a way to reconcile. And, you know, it's this constant dance back and forth.
Right.
I like getting up every day, feeling the same, feeling basically good, you know, just having great friends, family, people that I can talk to and share with. And, you know, not having to worry that someone's going to put the mug in the wrong place in my cabinet, which, you know, I mean, if I even have a house guest for like 2 nights, then I start to get very claustrophobic. I'm like, you know, why'd you do that? Why'd you put that there? No, this goes there. So no, but for me, being alive is a very rich experience of ideas and relationships and art and creativity. You know, I mean, I'm a composer, I'm a conductor, I'm an artist. I get to work with lots of people, like in you know, as a conductor of an orchestra and a chorus, you know, making beautiful music together, working with people's talents and abilities, trying to thread things together. So, yeah, and, you know, I do know that in my particular case, and I would not say that this is like the way that artists have to feel, but in my particular case, I think that my artistic and creative pursuits have much the same positive influence in my life that a solo romantic partner can have for like the most of the rest of humanity.
We continue on by singing, "Somebody hold me too close, somebody hurt me too deep, somebody sit in my chair and ruin my sleep and make me aware of being alive, being alive. Somebody need me too much, somebody know me too well. Somebody pull me up short and put me through hell and give me support for being alive. Make me alive, make me alive.
Somebody hold me too close, somebody hurt me too deep. Somebody sit in my chair and ruin my sleep and make me aware of being alive, being alive. Somebody need me too much, somebody know me too well. Somebody pull me up short and put me through hell and give me support for being alive. Make me alive. Make me alive. Make me
the biggest thing that I like to pull out from this section is that it's those modifiers that Sondheim is using inside of these lyrics, right? Because we have like, of being alive, for being alive, make me alive. Like, it's subtly the same, but it's actually different every time that line is put out there. You can really see that he's wrestling with like what he's trying to communicate.
It's the Sondheim special. He changed one word and changed the whole meaning, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, how does he do that? He either changes one word and changes the entire meaning, or he keeps everything exactly the same and changes the meaning, you know? I don't get it.
Yeah, he uses the...
Want somebody, you know?
Thank you. That's like the same thing. It's like you're just putting an emphasis on a different part of that sentence.
Mm-hmm.
Or 2 weeks ago when we met... and not just a few moments ago, there's that thing from I Never Do Anything Twice, which is like, I'll get in the habit, but I won't make it a habit, lyric goes,
yes.
Right? Which is like, oh, you're just using the same word. I know there's a literary term for that, and I can't remember what it is off the top of my head right now, but like, words spelled the same but have two vastly different meanings sort of thing, so.
Well, homonyms.
I just love it.
But yeah.
What's that?
Homonyms? Is that the word?
Oh, thank you. Yes, that is what it is. Homonyms. Yeah, like a master at showing what's going on there. maybe this will prompt even more letters here for us. But as far as like the new production that, again, fingers crossed, I'm supposed to be going to in April, making Bobby specifically a woman in the newest production, does that do anything? I guess, does that enrich this song in any type of way for you? Or is it basically just the same?
You know, I mean, I've heard the recording of the, you know, the Broadway production of the new version. I haven't seen the show. So it's hard to weigh in, I would say, in that regard. But I mean, I'm sure that there are different slants, there are different angles, there are different aspects that are brought out when you have a woman instead of a man in this role. But I'm pretty confident in saying what they're going for in this show is something that transcends gender concerns, even if it expresses itself differently in terms of gender dynamics in the way that it's played out in the show and that it would be in real life. But in terms of, you know, this kind of awakening or realization, you know, it's the same thing that could happen to a man or a woman or somebody of neither gender.
Well, that's the thing I think that I'm pretty sure we talked about this too, possibly, but specifically for Company, why I think it has remained vibrant and you can kind of redo it is that by changing any one of those elements, like the core emotion is similar, but it does change slightly the message a little bit. So meaning like you can change like race, gender, sexuality inside of this show, and yet kind of all the songs work still, just in vastly different contexts, I understand, but like it doesn't make it so that it breaks the show is what I'm trying to say.
That's right. And I think that you and I actually talked, I think that this is the second time that I've sort of weaseled my way into talking about Company on your podcast, because there was one other time I think we did for a little Patreon bonus or whatever. And I said, like, now that you've got both versions of this show or both versions of the lyrics, you know, for a man and a woman, like you should be able to do any combination. You know, I mean, because now you can have a man who's in love with a man. I mean, you know, Sondheim so devoutly maintains his stance that Bobby wasn't gay, but can't Bobby be gay now? You know, or sort of pansexual somehow. I mean, it's like you could have a woman sing the original 1970 lyrics or, you know, and any combination thereof.
Yeah. And I think that's maybe why I keep coming back to Company too. Is like it's one of those things that hits what I think great art can do is that it can transcend the time that it was created in. Like definitely like the music of Company, like you can tell it was written in the early 70s. But I think that the message behind it is like it's universal. And it's always going to be universal.
Yeah. And I'll say two things. One, I wish that on Broadway, people would get more into doing period pieces. Like I would like to see this staged as a, you know, the 1970 show that it was. And that would be, in a way, I think more interesting with a female Bobby, you know, to really put that in context. And then there's a lot more interesting things you could suss out about the period maybe and the constraints and what it meant to be female at that time.
Oh, 100%. I like when you uncover the fact that in America, I forget what year, it was like 1974 or 5 before women could have a credit card by themselves without having to co-sign it with a man.
Wild.
So it's like, yes, like let's do a 1970 version of Company where it's a woman. And it's like, you are very much in a very different world.
The other thing I'll say is that when you say that, you know, it's you listen to the score and you can tell that it was written in 1970, I think of that has most to do with Jonathan Tunick's orchestration. You know, I mean, it's like they wanted to make it sound so contemporary. And I think whenever you do that, whenever you shoot for like the now thing, all you're doing is dating yourself, you know, in the future. Sure. I think that without the orchestration, the songs have a little bit more of an eternal quality. This is probably one of my lesser favorite Jonathan Tunick orchestrations, although I think it is impressive in its own way. I mean, he talks about how like with this show he had to come up with a new orchestrational concept for every number. I mean, with maybe the couple little exceptions of like You Could Drive a Person Crazy, I mean, that had that 1940s, you know, Andrews Sisters vibe. Side by Side has a lot of Broadway pastiche in it. But for a number of the songs, you know, he really, and this song, I think more than any other, like, again, what is this? Like, how do you describe this song? It's such a sui generis piece. But I think that the orchestration is a little thick and the drum set, it dates it somehow.
It's that hard thing is like, that sounds like a major criticism I'm using. And it can be. Some things become so dated that it's like, okay, it's hard to find a way in. There's a bit of a charm to it, though. Like, I could listen to the original Broadway cast recording of Company, and like that weird synthesizer click thing that happens Absolutely. At the beginning. It's like, but it's kind of iconic. It's like, yeah, it's that's how you start the show. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I say that this is, you know, something of a weakness, but it's a weakness that I love, you know, in spite of it. It's like what you're supposed to do with a romantic partner, apparently. I'm willing to do with the orchestrations of company.
Right. It does make you confused, though, sometimes. And that's how we continue on, which they sing, make me confused, mock me with praise, let me be used, vary my days, but alone is alone, not alive. Somebody crowd me with love, somebody force me to care, somebody let me come through, I'll always be there, as frightened as you, to help us survive, being alive, being alive, being alive.
Make me confused, mock me with praise, let me be used, vary my days, but help us survive, being alive, being alive, being alive.
I've got a lyric change swap for you right there to do my interpretation. Alone is alive, not alone. Because don't forget, Kyle, no one is alone.
That's right. That's fine. I like that. I think I do have to also call out the fact that the documentary made about the making of the company album. It's always interesting watching like this song being recorded by Dean Jones.
Yeah.
Because it feels like the camera like zooming down his throat when he's singing this song. Definitely, and it's interesting to watch that being recorded. That whole documentary is fascinating. But I mean, the crowning piece is Elaine Stritch like losing her mind as they try and record her song.
Yeah, that documentary, you know, is just re-released by Criterion.
Criterion, it's up on the Criterion channel, as far as I know. Yeah. But I kind of want to get like the actual box set because it looks pretty cool.
It is pretty cool. I got it mainly because I knew that there was a new commentary track by Stephen Sondheim with it.
And what does he say?
It's underwhelming, I'm sorry to say. However, there is a special feature on the disc, which is a discussion between Frank Rich, Stephen Sondheim, and Jonathan Tunick, which is like about a 20 or 30 minute conversation that had some new insights, I thought, and was really quite good.
I guess to kind of like wrap this all together here, then, we've talked about this as the crowning piece. I'm assuming you might agree with the previous guest of the fact that you think that this song should happen and then like curtain.
Absolutely. Yeah. Blow out the, it ends on a bum, 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 bum. Blow out the candle. Show's done. Bows.
It is weird. Professionally recorded versions of Company that I have watched that are on YouTube. Mm-hmm. It is worth having that extra scene. It really does. It's just like, we don't need this. It's like, we're done. We got our emotional catharsis.
It's like the end of Don Giovanni. If any of your listeners out there are opera lovers, there's, you know, I mean, it ends on like the finality of that show is when there's this like huge demonic minor chords and Don Giovanni is flung into the pit of hell. And then they do this like little Liberty Gibbet kind of pastiche number right at the end. It's in D major all of a sudden. Yeah. It's like, no way, cut that.
So Company is the Don Giovanni of Broadway musicals is what we're trying to
say. Well, I mean, it's in this particular sense, but of course, in every other sense, Sweeney Todd is the Don Giovanni.
Yeah. If people wanted to check you out, see what you're up to online.
Yeah, if they want to get at me with all those ats, find me at Will C. White on Twitter. And, you know, I did just sort of allude to my classical music side of my online personality. And if you're interested in that, check out the Classical Gab Fest, which is a weekly podcast, a discussion about the ever-changing world of classical music with me and two of my friends.
And really make sure it is Will C. White, or else a very confused Will White is going to get a bunch of messages like, what are they talking about?
I know, yeah. Don't send it to Will E. White. That would be so
completely out of the question.
Then see the pretty girl smiling everywhere from the ads and the TV set.
Thank you so much for listening. You can send emails to printingittogetherpodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow Sondheim Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. And you can support the show on Patreon by going to patreon.com/puttingittogetherpodcast. Thank you to the Alberta Podcast Network, to PodPower, and to Park Power this week. Putting It Together is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and pretty much anywhere you can get podcasts from. Consider subscribing so that you never miss an episode. Next week, we are going to go to Sweden and maybe have a bit of a liaison with an older woman. As always, a big thank you to the great Chris Taniguchi, who designed the podcast artwork, and to Nick Driscoll for composing our theme music. Well, we've reached the end of our episode. Yes, I know. Goodbye for now.